I'd like to call the Metro Council meeting of February 6, 2020 to order. We have a quorum and we will go right into public communication. If anyone wishes to testify on a non-agenda item, now would be the time. I have one person signed up for a non-agenda item testimony of 3 minutes, and that's Tracy Farwell. Tracy, are you? Come on up. Good afternoon.
It is. Thank you. Council President Peterson, members of the council, I'm Tracy Farwell, a member of Engineers for a Sustainable Future, an organization the Portland area engineers meeting frequently to find opportunities to join the conversation about the climate crisis and actions to be taken, guided by the numbers. 2 days ago, more than 500 Oregon health leaders declared that climate change now poses a public health emergency. This report emphasizes the threat that diesel-fueled public transportation represents and strongly advocates for zero-emission vehicle technology. Sustainable engineers are committed to supporting this advocacy, calling attention to the urgency of taking effective action in the near term. It is our conviction that TriMet will not take immediate action without decisive intervention from the Metro Council leadership, given that the TriMet board has approved acquisition of 150 diesel buses without stipulating any timeline that ends diesel bus buys. Moreover, TriMet states it plans to continue buying the diesel bus buys for another 5 years. I suppose you notice that metropolitan Oregonians are hostages in this face-off between, on one side, public investment of public monies by unelected TriMet authorities who cannot be recalled, dictating public health risks from decades of uninterrupted diesel pollution, and on the other side, public health professionals. Who would approve such a plan? No one. What elected public authority is assessing TriMet's zero-emission fleet transition program against criteria that include public health? No such effort has been announced or is underway. Such programs are properly approved before they are formally given a go-ahead. In the case of TriMet, there is no external approval. We and our climate allies, and we're still working on forming up, will demand that Metro identify and cost out a zero-emissions fleet transition plan, secure funding, and stand up a program management office to get this job done on an emergency schedule. TriMet can implement the plan under emergency supervision. Public health demands it, and TriMet is not responsive.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
I didn't want to run off too quick in case there might be a question. But
Councilor Stacey.
Thank you, Mr. Farwell. We've been working with TriMet in the course of developing a regional transportation strategy for investment on the 2018 ballot. Or sorry, 2020, there I go again, skipping decades. It's been my understanding that the plan is to underwrite electrification of bus acquisition, of buses for future acquisition following the adoption of this measure. So that the replacement of buses in the current fleet, which have an expected useful life of 16 years, will be with electric buses. You're saying that TriMet plans to continue to buy more diesel buses for 15 years?
Well, the only reason I'm saying that is because I was in attendance when TriMet Management submitted a resolution authorizing the purchase of 31 diesel buses in the near term with an option to buy another 158. And there were 5 of 7 TriMet board members who voted in favor. So I'm just going by what I saw and what I heard.
I'll be happy to learn more about that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. If no one wishes to come forward on a non-agenda item for testimony, seeing none, close the public communication and move on to our resolutions. First, we have resolution number 20-5078 for the purpose of proclaiming February 1st through February 29th, 2020, Black History Month. We have Nyla Moore. We'll come up with former Counselor Ed Washington, the Honorable Ed Washington. And
other members of
supportive staff. Josh and Martin. Hi.
Thank you, Council President Peterson and counselors. My name is Nyla Moore, and I'm the Leadership Development and Training Coordinator for the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Program here at Metro. We are all here to share our experiences, how important Black History Month is, and what being Black in Oregon and America has been like for us. Black History Month is a time to celebrate our rich culture, our successes, and remind America that we are American history and should never be separated from that. It's a time that people from other cultures and ethnic groups, especially white people, should take time to engage and learn about a group of people that has been ostracized and demeaned from the time we were brought to this country, led to believe we were less than. I am here to represent for Black women in particular, the groundbreaking women who have been triumphant in many industries, and who, because of institutional racism, are still being lauded as the first and the only Black women to have held their titles. I am inspired by Black women leaders in Oregon who have paved the path for me. I want to advocate like Avell Gordley, educate like Joyce Harris, lead like Joanne Hardesty, be virtuous like Adrienne Nelson, and invest like Rakia Adams. And through my work at Metro, I have the opportunity to provide training and develop new equity leaders across the agency. I help to create employee culture from a diverse standpoint and create community for historically marginalized staff. I want to leave a stamp on this agency. I am the next transformative Black leader. And now I'd like to share with you a well-known leader from our community and more upcoming Black leaders like myself who help define, create, and speak on behalf of our community.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, President Peterson and fellow councilors. When I was asked to come and share with you all a little bit about my experience here at Metro and other places, and also just what it was like growing up here in Oregon, as well as other places. And, you know, I had to think about today and listening to all the things that are going on, and it really took me back to the time when I was about 12 years of age. My family comes from Birmingham, Alabama. We moved here in 1944 during the height of the Second World War. We lived in Vanport, stayed there until the flood of 1948. While in Birmingham, I was 4 years of age when I started school, not because I was a genius or anything, but schools were segregated, and I went to a segregated school, and the teachers all lived in our neighborhood, and One of the teachers was a very good friend of my mother. She said, you know, Eddie is big enough to be in school. Send him to school. So I went to school at age 4. When I got out here in Vanport, they put me where I should have been. So I was ahead a couple of years, so they put me in the right grade. And, you know, the experience in Vanport, many of you know about Vanport. You know the history of it. It had some very wonderful attributes. The school systems were absolutely remarkable. But after the flood, and when I turned 12 years of age, I decided I wanted to join Boy Scouts. My oldest brother was a Boy Scout, and so it was natural that I would follow. And my mom and dad separated when I was about 9 years of age. And there was a gentleman who was a Chief Scout executive in Portland. His name was George Herman Obertuffer. And if any of you have been out to, I think it's Tryon Creek State Park, I believe there's a bridge out there called Obie's Bridge or Obie's Trail. Mm-hmm. That was
Obie's Trail.
Yeah, that was the Mr. Obie who was the Chief Scout executive. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Obie was a remarkable person and took myself and my 2 other brothers under his wing to make sure that we got a good share of what this city should give us. Mr. Obie was a white gentleman. He was an older man at that time. He wasn't real, real old. But he really cared for us as if we were one of his kids. And I remember him saying to me when I was about 13, he says, Eddie, he said, I know that things are not what they should be here in this city and in this country. But he says, I just want to make sure that you and your brothers have every opportunity to participate in Scouts and have an opportunity to go to college. He says, things will change. And he says, I just want to make sure that you all are ready for those changes. And I think those are the words that really propel me for years. And as I look back, you know, understanding the history of this country, we're in a very interesting time, as all of us know. But, you know, back in the 1600s, when slaves were first brought to New York City, I was reading a story that they sort of gave a description of the slaves and all the other indentured servants that lived in New York City when it was under the, it wasn't called New York City then, it was under the auspices of the Dutch. And they said that if on a Friday night, if you, after all of the indentured servants and the slaves that were free and then others, they would get together at the, basically it was a neighborhood tavern. And the conversation was sort of always about how they were being treated by their masters. And they said that if you were to go in that place, you would see diversity. And we still have diversity. But I think somehow or another, we are getting away from some of those kinds of things. I have to answer a lot of questions to people that ask me what my situation is and what is it like being African American here in Portland. I've had my share of run-ins, but I would like to say that here at Metro, when I was a member of the council, I never had any run-ins other than political run-ins. This was a place where I really felt that as a counselor, I was accepted. And it's very rare that anybody ever mentioned that I was the first African-American council member here. It was where I wanted to be, and it was where I was able to come. So I think that as we look ahead, and particularly for all of you here at Metro, as you're dealing with all the different people of color, you know, they need mentors. They need for you to truly understand what their circumstances are. Not so much necessarily here, but if here, I would hope and I think that every one of you that I know that you would listen to that and to make sure that this government continues to move ahead. And I imagine that someday there may be another African-American counselor. I don't know when, but there may be. I know that, based on everybody that I know, that they will be given the same treatment that I was given. But you have some wonderful, I'm just so pleased to see the number of people of color here today. It wasn't this way when I was here. So keep the good work up. Support them, listen to them, and I know that none of you are afraid, especially with Council Member Mr. Stacy. He's one of the strongest men in the world, so. So that's all I have to say. But thank you so very much for allowing me to come back and say a few words. And I would like to say in closing that I don't think that any honor is greater to an elected official than to be welcomed back to where you serve, because a lot of times you're happy to see them go. You don't want to see them coming back. So thank you all for allowing me to come back and share a few words with you from time to time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. The honor is ours. Yes. Councilor Stacy.
Thank you. Councilor Washington.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for calling me out. But thank you so much for being here today, for being here on other ceremonial and observational occasions to remind us of our past. And thank you very much for the many tours you've led of Vanport and your narrative that describes the experience of living there. My parents were living in Vanport during the flood. I heard very little about that when I was growing up. And your connection to my past. And one of these days, we've got to have a cup of coffee together again.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. My recollection, I was on staff here when you were on council, and you were the peacekeeper in J-PACT. There are several times I remember you taking elected officials out of the room, telling them to behave. And I appreciate that.
Well, part of that is that my mom wouldn't hesitate to take me out of the room and tell me how to behave. So works both ways.
Awesome. So we've got two more folks to hear from before we get to the resolution. We have Josh Manis and Matten Gold. Thank you for being here today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. I'm not sure if mine is a proclamation or just kind of an account of my experience, but it's kind of a combination of things, and then also just a little bit of a message for other employees of color who couldn't make it here right now. So let me get right to it. 5 years ago, coming into Metro as a black male under 30, a creative, and a first-generation government employee, I had a lot to learn. Figuring out where you fit in can be hard, especially hard if there's no designated place for you. Oftentimes, it can feel like I'm treading water while everyone else is seated comfortably. Treading water makes you strong, but it also makes you tired. When you're tired, you make mistakes, and when you make mistakes, you fall off. When you fall off, you need somebody to catch you. For me, being caught means exchanging energy with someone who shares my same struggle. Oftentimes, walking the tightrope between bringing my real self to work and making sure that I'm not giving my coworkers too much blackness at work is a daunting task. But it feels good to know y'all are here to catch me, even if it's just seeing y'all in the hallway. I want to take this opportunity to thank all of the black people who allow me to lean on them when I feel like I don't have anything left in the tank. Your presence is valuable, and you are valuable. I'd also like to take this time to acknowledge all of the non-black success partners I've had during my Metro journey. I appreciate you as well, and without your contributions, this marathon would be a much tougher race. Normalize blackness, hashtag black at work.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, President Peterson, counselors. My name is Matten Gold, he, him, his. Trayvon Martin would have been 25 yesterday. My concern for Black History Month is at best it becomes rote, and at worst it becomes revisionist history, that we begin to tell ourselves stories that are palatable, the stories we like about Dr. King, stories we like about Rosa Parks, how she was just tired. So I'd like to tell you about another name that we do not talk about. His name is George Stinney, and he's the youngest person this country has ever legally murdered. This is 1944. 14-year-old black boy, wrongfully accused. The trial lasted a single day, all-white jury. The jury deliberated for 10 minutes. This is 1944, when black folks can't vote, when black folks cannot sit on juries, when black folks are not allowed in a courtroom. That means that his parents were not in that courtroom. It is said that there were 1,000 people in that courtroom that day. I can't imagine what it looks like to look out upon a sea of white faces that want to kill you. And they did kill him. They gave him the electric chair. He was 5'1", 90 pounds. He didn't fit in that chair. What he held to his chest was a Bible. And so they took that Bible and they used it as a booster seat. It took 8 minutes for this country to kill that boy. And by the end, his teeth were smoking. One of his eyes had exploded. But this is not the youngest boy that this country has ever legally killed. Tamir Rice was 12 years old. And he was shot the moment that that police officer came to the scene. And nothing happened to that police officer. In fact, the Cleveland Police Union last year argued that he should have his job back. And so what do I ask of you for Black History Month? I ask that every time you look at your children, in fact, I ask you every time you look at all children that you see George Stinney. And I hope that if I'm invited back next year to share another wonderful story, that I can tell you that this country has lost its penchant for killing black children, but I am not holding my breath. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, agreed. I just want to take a moment and say thank you for sharing your stories, and thank you for your truth, and thank you for your courage, because it does take all that to come forward and really put on the table what you want to communicate and how you want us to help see what you're seeing. And that helps. It helps to have that communication, so much appreciated. Any counselor? Counselor Chase?
Well, I want to thank everybody on our panel, you know, here, Nyla and Josh and Matan, you know, as folks who are working here in our organization and showing up every day in a place that is doesn't always feel welcoming and sticking it out and sharing your stories and helping us learn as we go through this process. And I hope that we can continue to learn how we can be as inclusive an agency as possible, and continue to learn. I just cracked open, just coincidentally this week, The Color of Law, you know, just to kind of review a couple pages in there, and there's so much in there. It's an incredible amount of information that I never had any exposure to growing up. You know, it was very limited in terms of black history and what kind of systematic institutional racism exists across the board in almost everywhere you look. And of course, we at Metro deal with a lot of the areas where systematic racism was really a part of and continues to be in ways that we discover and learn and understand around land use and so many other areas. And I want to just, again, Councillor Washington, I guess we'd say former councillor, but I still think of you as really a somebody who has been such a leader for Metro in helping, you know, educate me and all of us at Metro about some of that history. And I just think about one area in particular, just, you know, because we have been so engaged more recently and finally come along on some of that affordable housing work, and how much you always were kind of pushing and supporting and moving that agenda forward. And we were talking about places that we interacted with you, and that was where I was interacting with you back in the, you know, I can't remember the exact years, but it was like the inclusionary zoning and the framework plan. It was the affordable housing study and assessing and identifying actual strategies that we could implement, and you were, you know, a champion before it was really popular to be a champion on those issues, and so much more. So I just taking a little bit of time here, but I really appreciate you and thank you.
Tom, it was pointed out to me that I should have taken off my glasses and actually read your name correctly. I thought it was an M-A-R-T. Matarte, right? Thank you. That's what happens when you get old.
I just want to say thank you for your testimony. It was really very moving. And also that thank you for being an employee at Metro. I always enjoy crossing paths with you and Nyla. And it's just, so thank you very much. It's an honor to be able to work with you.
Councilor Lewis.
I'd like to thank all of you for coming and being in front of us today and recognizing this month that we hang a banner, but challenging us for 365 days a year, except in a leap year, then we get bonus. But my only interaction with you, former Councilor Washington, has been up at the Expo Center, and your willingness to engage and remind us that the histories are still living, and you reflecting on, you know, the way that you were moving through some video very much like your father, and then we have the next generation, and kind of the through line of all of that is what progress looks like, and that it's personal and it's not just institutional. So yes, the institution has to change, but it's people who make that so. So thank you to our staff for being part of that. We're an agency that's very obsessed with maps. When I got here, they asked if I wanted a map holder for my office. And one thing that when you look at a map of the Portland area, the Portland region, we haven't adequately traced is how the Black community has been moved and forcibly moved and forced out through different parts of our district because of different laws. And those are laws that we may have some impact on, and we are starting to get our arms around them. But then you also remind us there are also laws in this country that our code, our statute, doesn't touch, but we still feel the responsibility, and thank you for reminding us of that. So thank you.
Councillor Dirksen, would you like to read the proclamation?
I'd be happy to.
Resolution.
For the purpose of proclaiming February 1st through February 29th, 2020, Black History Month. Whereas Carter G. Woodson, Black scholar and son of former slaves, sought to raise awareness of African-American contributions and organize the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, the ASNLH, which first initiated Black History Week in February 1926. And whereas Black pioneers were among the earliest non-Native people to settle in Oregon, but it was not until World War II that the Black population in Greater Portland increased due to the need for wartime labor. Black communities in Portland thrived momentarily during the post-war, but would experience trauma and disruption from racist policies that would displace many Black community members over time. And whereas celebrating Black History Month in Greater Portland and Oregon also means to acknowledge the legacy of racist and exclusionary practices and policies that caused generational harm and pushed many Black community members away from their community and the region. And whereas, despite the growing population of communities of color in Greater Portland, Black community members make up under 4% of the Tri-County region. And whereas it is the responsibility of all of us in government to call attention to the continued need to recognize and combat racism, lead with racial equity to dismantle racist policies, and to build a community in which all are welcomed, respected, and can thrive. And whereas Black History Month is a time where all community members are encouraged to reflect on past and current injustices faced by Black communities and seek actions that ensure freedom, justice, and inclusion. And whereas it is also a time to celebrate the many accomplishments and important contributions that Black Americans have made to Greater Portland and in Oregon, including in politics, medicine, the environment, sports, and the arts, despite these obstacles, and whereas Metro's workforce encompasses 6% of individuals who identify as Black Americans, and whereas Metro is committed to continuing to partner with community-based organizations and community leaders to strengthen relationships, advance opportunities to engage and participate at the decision-making table, and receive guidance on achieving outcomes that foster the prosperity of Black community members in Greater Portland. Would you, President, care to do the B or the resolved? Oh, sorry, didn't mean to catch you off guard.
Be it resolved that the Metro Council proclaims February 1st through February 29th, 2020, Black History Month in the Greater Portland region to be adopted today. With that, do I have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved by Councillor Dirksen and seconded by Councillor
Chase.
See, you thought that it was Councillor Chase. The clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Lewis?
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. It is passed. Thank you so much. And thank you again for coming forward and sharing. And we'll just continue to live this month and this year. Colleagues, we'll move on to resolution number 20-5071 for the purpose of authorizing execution of an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Gresham for implementation of the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Measure. It's a big day in so many different ways. We have Emily Lieb here to make a presentation, and I'll ask you all to quietly go. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Metro Council President and Councilors. I'm very happy to be back with you today for our fifth intergovernmental agreement for implementation of the housing bond today with the City of Gresham. Last year, Gresham created a local implementation strategy that complies with the expectations outlined in the housing bond program work plan adopted by the Council. And the LAS has been reviewed by our Community Oversight Committee for the bond and recommended to you for approval as part of the intergovernmental agreement. So as I have been doing with each of these IGAs, I just have a few slides with some highlights of what's in the local strategy and an overview of what's in the IGA. Gresham is eligible for $26.7 million in housing bond funding for capital projects. Along with that funding comes a target of 187 total affordable homes, of which 77 will be deeply affordable at 30% AMI or below, and no more than 10% or 19 of homes will be affordable in the 61 to 80% AMI range. 93 of those will be, and 93 homes will be family-sized at two bedrooms or larger. They're also eligible for $563,000 in program administration funding throughout the implementation timeframe, which is anticipated to take about 5 to 7 years. They've conducted significant engagement to inform how those units will be developed, and also how racial equity and engagement will be incorporated throughout the project. So they partnered with Housing Authority, with Home Forward on much of that engagement, which included interviews with service providers in Gresham, conversations with school district staff, and conversations with members of the African American, Slavic, and Latino communities. Their plan estimates that they will achieve those targets through four projects, although that number could be more or less depending on the size of the projects. Like previous plans you've reviewed, they have a 20% goal for participation of COVID-certified firms owned by women, minorities, women, and emerging small businesses. And finally, the Gresham City Council approved the IGA this week on February 4th. The Oversight Committee reviewed the plan on November 6th of last year and has recommended it to you for approval with some considerations for ongoing monitoring, which included a priority consideration related to tracking and reporting on outcomes related to advancing racial equity. That's a consideration that has come to you with each of these plans that you've considered, as well as several bullet points listed in Attachment 1 of your staff report as additional guidance for all jurisdictions. Those are considerations that the Oversight Committee will be reviewing as part of the annual review process and bringing to you, highlighting for you in their annual report. So the local implementation strategy is Attachment A to the Intergovernmental Agreement, and that agreement lays out the process by which and conditions under which we will disperse funding on a project-by-project basis for eligible projects, and annually in the case of the administrative funding. Each project will be reviewed at both the concept and final phase by Metro staff. All projects will have restrictive covenants ensuring the long-term affordability. There will be an annual progress report submitted on the progress for what's described in the local implementation strategy, and an annual financial reporting at end of fiscal year. And I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Councillor Stacey, and then Councillor Craddock.
I will allow the resident councillor for that district to ask the question.
Councillor Craddock.
Okay, thank you. So thank you for the report and also for pointing out to us some of the questions that the committee has made regarding this, moving this forward. So I really appreciate this. Thank you very much. So one of the questions the Oversight Committee asked or had a discussion about is, I know the City Council is really important to them to focus on home ownership. And I wanted to, and I know there were some concerns raised about how the city might go about being able to achieve their targets with that as a focus. And so can you elaborate on that, describe
sure.
that, what are some of the yeah. questions, concerns that the committee mentioned?
Sure. So home ownership was described as a priority that the city is interested in pursuing with bond funds, and home ownership is, as you know, eligible for bond funds. Part of the conversation that the committee members raised, or the questions they had, related to the challenge of achieving the 30% AMI targets. If you take some of the units that could potentially be generating a higher rent if they're regulated at 60% AMI, if you take those out of the pool to be able to cross-subsidize those deeply affordable units. So in the modeling that we did to set the targets for the bond, we assumed that you could cross-subsidize a portion of those units with higher earning rents. So that was one of the questions they had. The staff at the meeting clarified that they would expect perhaps one of those four projects might be home ownership, and I think the committee found that reassuring, not only for the reason I just mentioned, but also thinking about a mix of income levels and buildings. And then I think the last thing that came up in the committee's discussion was making sure that the language used to talk about the value of homeownership is not inadvertently stigmatizing the value of rental housing. So that was kind of another theme of that discussion.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I assume that as the manager of the program, mm-hmm. you'll be monitoring that, following that as we move forward.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor mm-hmm. Stacey, and then Councillor Chase and Lewis.
Mm-hmm. And the response to Councillor Craddock's question was responsive to my concerns and questions as well, so thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
I had a similar question, but thank you for the answer.
Great.
I do have a kind of follow-up on that, and I start with this, which is, I always find it helpful for us to reiterate that we had a very extensive process with stakeholder engagement to identify that the targets are achievable that we have set for this, mm-hmm. and when I hear folks saying, these are not achievable, the 0-30, that is not the determination that was very carefully evaluated, and we continue to have assessed mm-hmm. through our staff and at council that those are achievable goals, and, mm-hmm. and so I'm very pleased with that, and I just like to reiterate that I appreciate you for helping make sure that is clear. When we're And I think in terms of addressing some of those levels of homeownership, we've said, yes, that, that is a strategy that is a part of the housing continuum that we want to be addressing. And I think when we get into especially some of the permanent affordable land trust kind of model where we were creating homeownership opportunities that exist in perpetuity, a wonderful model, absolutely fantastic. That is to say that how do we juggle the component of if a jurisdiction is going to go forward with the homeownership component first, if there's four projects and it's sort of like this balance of, hey, we're going to do the homeownership, we're going to do the low income, the 0 to 30, we're going to make all of these work. How do we process that if one project sort of moves forward, that's the homeownership project, without really being clear on, hey, how's the 0-30 going to work? Are we going to approve one and those resources go out the door, and then all of a sudden folks come back to us and say, well, you know, it doesn't pencil out now. We thought it would. How do we kind of work with that?
So the basis for the our administrative review of each project is twofold. One is consistency with what's in the local implementation strategy, and then the second is demonstrated progress toward achieving the unit production goals. So if we had a project come forward first that we had some questions about whether they still have a clear path to achieve the goals with their remaining projects, I think we would be asking them to show us a plan with some numbers that shows how they can still achieve that through their next three, how they can still achieve those goals and commit to following through with the next three projects. And in some cases, there may be a reason why, you know, that timing plays out that way. And the program provides flexibility that projects are going to contribute different things toward the goals. But the review that we'll be doing is to see, is there a clear path to achieve all of the goals ahead? And if not, could you show us a plan at that stage? So I think that's the protection we have.
Thank you. Councilor Lewis?
Sure. So, I mean, you just pointed to homeownership as a strategy that does require a different kind of cross-subsidy, but one cross-subsidy that we've actually been planful about is the addition of project-based or housing choice Section 8 vouchers. And we know that Portland and Gresham are sequenced last year because they have some of the greatest challenges with the majority of the vouchers that could have been available already at capacity through the City of Portland housing bond. So my question is, do you know if the City of Gresham has made any progress in working towards any dedicated vouchers for their 0 to 30% population served through this bond?
Yeah, great question. I know they have been having conversations with Multnomah County and Home Forward, but to my knowledge, they don't have any commitments. Going back to that, the modeling, and these are all very rough assumptions, but based on the modeling we did, we think it would take about $378,000 a year in ongoing subsidy to support two-thirds of their 77 30% units. Our understanding is there are conversations underway, but those commitments have not been confirmed at this time.
As follow-up, I wonder if it would be appropriate either for me as a housing liaison or for council to request of Gresham staff just an update memo as these conversations progress towards making sure that there isn't a gap here.
That we'd be happy to ask for an update. That makes a lot of sense.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Councillor Craddock.
A comment. Well, I'd like to introduce. We have two people in the audience. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure and introduce, and then I'll have another question for you. So I want to make sure and introduce Councillor David Widmark, Gresham City Councillor. Thank you, Councillor, for being here today. Councillor Widmark is not only a Gresham City Councillor, but he sits on the Home Forward's Board of Directors. He represents Gresham at Home Forward and is Chair Emeritus. So you're very involved with affordable housing, very knowledgeable. And so thank you. Really appreciate you being here today and showing your support, because I know you're definitely a champion. So thank you. And then I want to introduce Mr. Carr. Really nice to officially meet you today. Jeff Carr is the Chief Executive Officer of Albertina Kerr. Albertina Kerr has been in Gresham in East Multnomah County for many, many years and have a beautiful campus there. And I know that you are looking at, hopefully, that you might access some of these funds and have a pretty good solid plan moving forward. So thank you for your enthusiasm and for also being here today. And hopefully it'll work out for your future plans. So thank you. So the comment I have here, as you can see, Mr. Carr here today, the city of Gresham is very fortunate. They have several projects that are already in the pipeline. There's interested parties. They mentioned that there would be solicitation this spring. What can you elaborate on some of these projects? Or how, what's going on? How well things are moving forward? Any words of wisdom to us about this?
Yeah, I can't tell you a lot about the specific projects, but I know I've heard from staff anecdotally as many as 12 different projects have come forward to the city to express interest in Metro Bond funds, and so appropriately they are planning a competitive solicitation to be able to evaluate all of those projects on a fair basis. I know in the conversations I've had, they've said they could identify a few projects. It's going to depend on how many competitive proposals they get. They do have a significant pipeline there, so it makes sense they want to move quickly. Again, there is this the challenge Councillor Lewis raised about the commitments for operating subsidy. I'm not aware that they have those commitments lined up to be part of that NOFA process, so I think that's also a consideration of how competitive how the ability of those projects to line up the resources to achieve the 30% goals will be one of the questions. But my understanding is they have a strong pipeline and they're planning to put a solicitation out this spring, which would be, we have two out right now and two more expected in the spring. So we'll have a lot of funding out for competitive bidding this spring. It's exciting.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions before? Okay. Well, thank you. The amount of work that's gone into these IGAs obviously is a lot of very good work, both on the attorney's side and in planning. So just thank you for getting us this far, and we look forward to the continued momentum.
Thank you.
All right.
I do have a question based on that. Where are we with the completion of all the IGAs with the different jurisdictions that are the housing providers?
So far you have, this will be the fifth IGA, so we have remaining City of Portland and Home Forward. We're in active conversations with the City of Portland and will be with Home Forward soon. Portland just had a solicitation out for their own bond funds this past fall, so they're not planning to put out a Metro solicitation until this coming, sort of later this year, to allow time for that pipeline and demand to build back up. But we are working with them and should be bringing you IGAs for those two in the spring.
Great. Thank you.
All right, do I have a motion for resolution number 20-5071?
I move to approve resolution number 20-5071 for the purpose of authorizing execution of an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Gresham for implementation of the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Funds.
Second.
It's been moved by Councillor Craddock and seconded by Councillor Stacey. The clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Lewis?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. It passes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yay, Councillor. All right. Moving on to resolution number 20-5065 for the purpose of establishing the Parks and Nature Fund and for amending the fiscal year 2019-20 budget and appropriation schedule. I have Lisa Houghton here to help us out.
So good afternoon, Council President, Councilors. I'm Lisa Houghton, Metro's Financial Planning Manager. So the resolution being presented today for consideration will establish the budgetary and accounting framework necessary to allow the Parks and Nature Bond Program, approved last fall by the voters, to move forward. It establishes a new fund, which will provide accountability and great transparency. It recognizes $10 million in bond proceeds. It adds $10 million of new appropriation authority and 6 additional FTE. And I know the department has given you many updates on the programmatic aspects of the program, so that is basically the end of my presentation. And I would be very happy to take questions.
Any questions from counselors? Any comments from Mr. Scott? Nope. Pretty straightforward. All right. Do I have a motion?
I move Resolution 2050-65 to establish Parks and Nature Fund and amend the 2019-20 budget and appropriation schedule.
Is there a second?
Second.
I move by Councillor Lewis and second by Councillor Stacey. The clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Lewis?
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. It passes. Thank you. And thank you to all the Metro staff work and parks to get us to this place. All right. At this time, I will recess the meeting of the Metro Council and convene the Metro Contract Review Board. We'll move on to resolution number 20-5077 for the purpose of seeking an exemption from competitive bidding and procurement of construction manager general contractor services by competitive request for proposals for the Oregon Convention Center staff space renovations project. We've got Julie Hoffman and Brent Shelby here to help us kick this off. Thank you.
Not quite as long as last Thursday.
No. Last time was even longer. More of a mouthful.
I'll try to make this short and sweet. Good afternoon, councilors, council president. I'm Julie Hoffman, a senior procurement analyst here at Metro. This is Brent Shelby, a senior project manager with this construction project management office. Brent focuses mainly on OCC projects. Oregon Revised Statute 279C and Metro Local Contract Review Board Rules Chapter 49 direct Metro staff to use a low bid process when buying public improvements, except if we get an exemption from our Local Contract Review Board. Today, we are here to request that exemption from you so that we may solicit proposals for the Oregon Convention Center staff area renovation, so that we may do a request for proposals for construction manager general contractor. Brent has written up many details in his staff report about why we feel this exemption is warranted, but briefly, it is in the public's best interest because it is likely to result in a cost savings, since we'll have the designer and the construction contractor working together and collaborating on this complicated project. It is unlikely to encourage favoritism, since it is an open, fair competition. And most important, we can look at the best value so we can evaluate sustainability and diversity in the proposal process. Procurement Services recommends an RFP process for Oregon Convention Center staff area renovation project. Thank you.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Any questions? We don't.
Thanks.
Heard that. All right. Since there are no questions for staff, thank you. We will open a public hearing on this. If you are here to testify on this agenda item and wish to come forward and testify, now would be the time. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. And we need a motion. Do you have a question?
No, I don't have a question. I just have a statement. Oh, okay. Just for our viewing audience, that the reason why we don't have any questions is staff nicely reviewed this with us in a work session.
Yes.
So we're quite familiar with the project. And thank you very much for your thorough educating us properly. So thank you.
You're welcome. Good call. Thank you. All right. Is there a motion?
I move resolution number 2050-77 for the purpose of seeking an exemption from competitive bidding and procurement of construction manager general contractor services by competitive request for proposals for the Oregon Convention Center staff space renovations project.
Do I have a second?
Second. Councillor Dirksen.
Hi. Okay. It's been moved by Councillor Lewis and seconded by Councillor Dirksen. Any further discussion?
Comment.
Yeah.
When I was in the Army, we used to joke that when you go into combat, all of your equipment was provided by the lowest bidder.
Right.
And using this process, you don't just get the cheapest, you get the best and least expensive.
I agree.
Which
every soldier should have. Yes.
And just one additional comment. These projects are generally our back-of-house operations, but the benefit here is that we'll be able to have kind of a seamless front of house even while we're ripping up stuff behind the scenes. So excited to see that work underway.
Thank you. All right. Clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Lewis?
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. It passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the hard work. Can't wait to see completed.
Yeah. All right. Invite us on a tour when it's done.
All right. I'm going to gavel us out of the Metro Contract Review Board to be adjourned and reconvene us as the Metro Council. We have a consent agenda that we put till the end. Today's consent agenda consists of two items. Resolution number 20-5068 for the purpose of adding two new projects to the 2018-21 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program involving ride connection in support of senior and disabled persons' needs and ODOT in support of the Columbia Bottomlands Conservation Project. And for consideration of the council meeting minutes for January 30th, 2020. Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Don't all come forward at once. It's been moved by Councillor Chase and seconded by Councillor Stacey. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It passes. Thank you. All right, moving on. Mr. Scott, any communications for the day?
Just two quick items today following up on the Black History Month proclamation that you passed earlier today. Two events coming up. First, Metro is sponsoring this year's Cascade Festival of African Films. This is the longest-running nonprofit, non-commercial African film festival in the United States. It spans 5 weeks, includes films of all lengths and topics by both established and emerging African directors representing 18 different countries. The festival's website writes, "The Cascade Festival of African Film shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films celebrate Africa's achievements, expose its failures, and reveal possibilities for a hopeful future. It's free, open to the public, and you can find more information at africanfilmfestival.org. The second item I wanted to note is that DEI is going to be hosting Parks and Nature's Matan Gold, who, of course, was here just an hour ago testifying on the proclamation. He's going to be doing a presentation on how water has historically been weaponized against the Black community and why this is important to Metro's storytelling and community engagement strategies. His discussion is going to lead from Flint, Michigan to northern Ghana, from the redlining of public pools back to the slave citadels of West Africa. And I think given the short story he told today, we can be pretty sure that's going to be a powerful presentation. So all Metro employees are welcome. It is on Wednesday, February 26th from noon to 1 p.m. Here in MRC room 370. That's all I have.
All right. Councillors, any communication? Seeing none? Really? We're adjourned. Thank you. Oh, actually, sorry.
Oh.
Right.
Adjourned,
I just need to announce, seeing no further discussion, the council will now meet in the council annex for an executive session held pursuant to ORS 192.660 sub 2 sub A to consider the employment of a public officer, employee, staff member, or individual. At the conclusion of the executive session, we will return to open session and do not expect to take action other than to adjourn. So we did not adjourn just now. The next regular council meeting is scheduled for February 20th, 2020 at 2 p.m. at the Metro Regional Center Council Chamber.